This is Wickham Sound.
Hello, hello everyone. My name is Dane Cobain. You're listening to The Arch on Wickham Sound. We're on 106.6 FM Wickham Sound, live and online every Tuesday, 7 till 8pm. This is a show where we talk about local artists, musicians, poets, theatre people, you name it, we try and talk about it. If you're involved in the Wickham arts scene, I would love to hear from you, so please do drop me an email on dane.cobain@wickhamsound.org.uk. That's dane.cobain@wickhamsound.org.uk. We're also on Facebook if you just search for The Arts Show Wickham Sound. Also, each week we recommend a movie / TV show, a book and an album, so keep your ears peeled for that later on. We also have a different guest on each week, so this week we're going to be talking to fantasy novelist JV Hilliard. He's a client of mine, I work with him as an editor, and he's working on this really fascinating book series called the Warminster series. But before we get into all of that, I normally have a little ramble about something or other, and the current thing that is on my mind is medical waste. Hear me out here. So, as my job, I'm a freelance writer, and one of my clients is an American doctor is called Emmanuel Fombu. We actually had him on the show earlier on to talk about coronavirus and COVID-19. And one of the things that I've noticed, because I'm writing a lot of articles for him, is this issue of medical waste. So in the early days of lockdown, I noticed pretty quickly, like as I was walking around, just walking around Wickham, I would see, masks and gloves just discarded on the floor. I was kind of wondering, like, what is going to happen with all of these things? I mean, a lot of them are made out of plastic and latex and all of this stuff. And I was watching a video that these divers shot somewhere in the French Riviera, and they found lots of COVID masks and gloves on the seabed. And of course, again, who knows how long they're going to take to break down, and even if they get into landfills and stuff like that. And then it kind of also begs the question of, what do you do with this stuff? Like, it's medical waste at the end of the day, especially if it's single-use stuff. Obviously, if you've got a reusable face mask, you can wash it in the correct conditions and stuff. And I mean, even like nurses, I don't know if this is still the guidance, but certainly early on and when things were hitting very, very hard in New York City, the guidance was for doctors and nurses, if they could, the best thing to do was to have a shower, basically, before they started and after they finished their duty. All of their clothes were supposed to be bundled up and either immediately washed. If you couldn't immediately wash them, they need to be sealed in plastic bags and then handled with gloves when you do wash them. I don't know, I just think it's an interesting thing that we've had to adapt to this this new way of living. And with it, I think one of the unsung things is this issue of the disposal of the, you know, the used gloves and masks, and how we as a society are going to find ways to deal with that. I don't know what the answer is, but I do hope we find an answer that doesn't involve strewing stuff all over the seabed. I guess that brings me on to another related subject, which is like the idea of a global pandemic and how it relates back to the way we treat the planet and the way we treat nature. I mean, I'm a bit of a hippie, like, full disclosure here. I'm vegan as well, as is Claire, who was last week's guest, actually. So we were having a lovely little chat about vegan pick-a-mix. There's a little place in Marlow that you can order online. In fact, I've got some coming, so I will let you know in the next show whether they're any good. But because of that, like, I read a lot about, you know, animal agriculture and the factory farming system and things like that. And the general consensus is that even though this pandemic came from a wet market in Wuhan, it could just as easily have been a factory farm in Pennsylvania, you know? I've actually written a novel called Meat, which I haven't released yet. It's in the editing stages. But this follows like an outbreak at a factory farm. It's like a fictitious British factory farm. We actually don't really do the mega farms that the US is doing. But yeah, I do find it interesting to look at the different ways that like the pandemic relates back to the way we use the planet, basically, and vice versa as well. So for example, during the pandemic, because of lockdown, people were driving a lot less. So I saw a study that said there were 11,000 fewer deaths due to emissions across Europe. We're seeing like wildlife return to areas that it's disappeared from, again, because of this sort of cessation of human activity. So it's kind of interesting to me that it's worked both ways. You know, it's actually human activity in our relationship with the planet that has arguably brought about the pandemic. And then the pandemic has then forced us to reevaluate our relationship with the planet. And it's just an interesting thing. I even saw a headline saying that Britain, I don't know whether it's happened yet or whether it's due to happen, but we've already smashed records anyway for the longest time we've not used coal to power the electricity grid, and it's coming up to 2 months without using any coal stations. Basically, at the start of lockdown, they were shut down because the supply far outstripped demand, and they haven't been turned back on. Now, I'm not an expert on this as well, so there is every chance that a lot of the power that we're using today was powered by coal over 2 months ago and has been stored or whatever and is now being reused. But yeah, I mean, it's good that we're switching to more sources of renewable energy, I suppose, especially during the middle of a pandemic. So if we can just sort out this issue of the disposable masks and whatnot, then I think we're golden for a little while at least. Bought us some time with climate change too. But we're getting pretty political here, and I don't want to do that too much because the show is about the local arts as opposed to my political beliefs, I suppose. So we're going to listen to some local music. I actually have the perfect song to play based on what I was just saying. I was having some problems with my internet the other day, and so the only music I could listen to was my like stockpile of local music MP3s that I've got for running this show. And I was listening to Clive Whitelock, who has been a previous guest, and he's got this song called Blood Money. And I guess I'll just let it speak for itself. But yeah, as I was listening to it, I thought this is hitting a bit hard at the moment. So Blood Money, Clive Whitelock.
I'm not making any judgment. It's really not my place. I'm just another member of this perfect human race. It's not my affair. You do as you please. Why should I care? It's nothing to me. All animals are soulless. They're here for us to use. Their lives don't have a meaning. They have nothing to lose. They're dumb, they're unclean. They don't have a brain. They're just like machines. They don't feel the pain. How fortunate they are to live in such a caring world. How grateful they must feel to have their short lives made so full. You've earned your blood money. Your blood money. It's not my affair. You do as you please. Why should I care? It's nothing to me. How fortunate they are to live in such a caring world. How grateful they must feel to have their short lives made so full. You've earned your blood money. You earned your blood money. Your blood money. Your blood money. Your blood money. So yours. So yours.
love music, love talk, love Wickham Sound.
Being a foster carer isn't just about providing vulnerable children a safe home. It's about loving, listening and guiding. It's about changing their lives. If there's space in your home and you have the time and patience, then Nexus Fostering wants to hear from you. We're your local fostering agency, rated outstanding by Ofsted, and we're here to support you in supporting them with full training and a competitive allowance. For a career that really makes a difference, visit nexusfostering.co.uk or call 0800 389 0143.
Hi, it's Pippa here. Join me every morning at 7 o'clock for the Wickham Sound Breakfast Show, featuring all your usual favourites, including Carefree Karaoke, The Breakfast Banger, Chiquitita's Choice, and, in an effort to keep your morning routine as normal as possible, we'll be taking the register at 8:45. I'll name check all the people that have been in touch with me every morning. So why not tweet me, send me a message on Facebook, or email studio@wickhamsound.org.uk. Don't be late now, and no skulking behind the bike sheds. That's the Wickham Sound Breakfast Show every weekday morning from 7.
This is Wickham Sound.
I don't need to know what's going on. My bubble telling me I'm wrong. No social media's pushing me to say that left is right, we're finding every day. It's not fake, it's not funny, just true. It's not fake, it's not funny, just true. The powers that be are telling me to say that it's all good, everything has come my way. A falsehood just to make the party blow. Majority misleading us to go. It's not fake, it's not funny, just true. It's not fake, it's not funny, just true.
Thank you.
is Wickham Sound.
That was the Rockola Morning Band with Inside a Bubble, and before that we had Blood Money by Clive Whitelock. 100% didn't realise it when I picked out that Rockola Morning Band song, but it's kind of oddly appropriate considering we are now all allowed to be inside a bubble with one of the household if we live alone, which I do, so it means I can see my mum at last. Hooray! So we've reached that part of the show where we're joined by a weekly guest, and this week we're going to be joined by JV Hilliard, who is a fantasy novelist as well as a client of mine, and he's working on a series called the Warminster series, which is super cool, so I wanted to share it with you guys. So over to JV Hilliard. The first question that I've been asking everybody is, what was the last book that you read and what did you think of it?
So the last book I read was The Fall of Shannara, which was the latest in the Terry Brooks series, and I've been reading them since the mid-80s, mm-hmm. All the way back to The Sword, and, you know, I'm a big fan, so of course I liked it, I enjoy the direction of it, and I've taken in everything I can from rereading them many times to watching the old MTV series, mm-hmm. When it was on a few years back. It's one of those things that I can't get enough of, and, you know, I like the way that he develops his characters, I like the way that the series has survived over a 20-year-plus period, and the latest book is just as much of a win. Although I did read that over top of the Patrick Rothfuss series, The Name on the Wind.
Yeah.
And I'm on the second book in that as well. And that was recommended to me by a clerk in a Barnes & Noble. I don't know how I didn't know that was out. I don't know how I missed it, but I'm already into book two on that one, and that's another one that... I'm really enjoying.
It's funny. I think I've not read that. Well, actually, both of those series I've come across the Patrick Rothfuss one on BookTube. So a lot of like video creators talk about it. But the Shannara books, I remember growing up around those because my dad used to be he was into a lot of old fantasy and sci-fi as well. So like myself, I've been reading Asimov recently, and I kind of associate that with my childhood in a way because again, I used to have all these old like. The old pan sci-fi class sci-fi books.
Yeah, the same thing here. I mean, I grew up in the mid-80s and early 90s, mm-hmm. and you know, the Shannara books were real popular then, and there's, you know, I think they riffed off a lot of, you know, what the Tolkien sci-fi the fantasy adventure stuff that was there. Clearly a different realm and a lot of great ideas, but I like the way that they borrowed the genre from that and built on it. And I think a lot of authors have done the same over the years, like R.A. Salvatore, mm-hmm. and some of the others that really have a sort of a background in Dungeons and Dragons, and the way that has sort of transformed and with the, you know, the Peter Jackson, you know, Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. and the Hobbit trilogies that they did, I think it really kind of popularized it, and the genre's even been pushed forward a little bit by, out of the 80s and back into the 2018s and the 2020s, mm. with Ready Player One and sort of Stranger Things on Netflix.
Yeah.
They've kind of made that popular again.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's something that I wanted to talk about, which is really like why you think D&D is enjoying a resurgence. Well, not just D&D, but fantasy in general, because I suppose you've got... Obviously, you've got the Game of Thrones TV series, which was insanely successful and breaking all kinds of records. I sent you that video of the D&D memes the other day, and he was talking in that about in US prisons, it's becoming like super popular to play D&D because I suppose it helps to take people out of where they are. I mean, why do you think like D&D manages to keep this popularity like from the 80s all the way through to the 2010s, 2020s?
Well, I think it, in part, it's a great game.
Yep.
I've seen it. I started playing it with the original version, the Advanced Dungeons and Dragons mm-hmm. version, and we've continued to play into, you know, I mean, in fact, this evening, you know, our group gets together via Skype because we're all scattered around the country, mm-hmm. And we play sort of a homebrew version of it that, you know, every rules that we played with under the first edition all the way up to new rules that are in the fifth edition. Mm. And I think there's an addicting quality to it. You get to play somebody not. There's an escapism, as you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. about the prisoners. There's something there. And I learned this when, you know, my uncle, who was paralyzed in the Vietnam War, mm-hmm. I basically grew up in his bedroom, and that was a form of escapism for him. It was something that was all mental. He didn't have to be physical.
Yep.
But the way that you role play, you describe that, and I think you can play anybody you want to be, right? And so there's something that's sexy about that. It's really addicting. Mm-hmm. And whether or not you want to play a knight one day or a sorcerer the next, that's available to you, and I think that's fun. And I also think that the owners of the Dungeons and Dragons label over the years have done a good job of renewing it from time to time. I mean, I was just on the back end of the, Magic the Gathering stuff, and when Wizards of the Coast bought the label, from a fading TSR, they renewed the game, and again, there's been renewals all the time, and I think that's important. And the same thing happens for gamers that do, things as recent as Fortnite or, Call of Duty. I mean, you've got to have something that's fresh, but something that, brings the old guard back, but brings in the new guard. And I think the video that you did send me, there was a perfect analogy of that, where there was, a kid that was challenging the host and said, well, have you ever heard of Dungeons and Dragons? Mm-hmm. Well, I am part of that old guard and I've been dragged along. And I think in the 5.0 version, we've seen, the Tomb of Horrors and the Ravenloft series, and real sort of epic and classic Dungeons and Dragons resurrected in the form of the new game. And so for guys like me, that's interesting to kind of replay the new version of it, while for, new gamers, it's probably as fun for them as it is for oldies like us.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think from my point of view, because... I actually, it's funny you mention Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, because I used to play that when I was a teenager, because my dad and his best friend, they both played it again the first time around, and they'd kept all of the books and everything. So that's sort of the two families we used to meet up and play that. But also, again, being surrounded by all these books, so you mentioned R.A. Salvatore, and I was really into his. He had I think it was a trilogy called the Spear Wielder series, and it was about this just everyday American guy who worked in a factory, and he goes out into the woods one day, and he finds himself in this, fictional, this mystical world and whatnot. But with R.A. Salvatore, as you said, he's also done so many books in, like, the Forgotten Realms series. He's the guy who created Drizzt Do'Urden, who's probably, like, the most famous D&D character, I guess. But so you've got all these books coming out. And again, when I was younger, there was, like, Baldur's Gate and Icewind Dale that are based on the D&D engine. So I suppose, there's always been new stuff happening within the D&D community as well. And, like, all these... Again, these new innovations, like as you're saying, you're playing over Skype, which wouldn't have been, nobody would have even thought of that when the original first edition was made,
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think the R.A. Salvatore books with Drizzt came, it happened during a time where there was another resurgence, when the D&D players migrated from Greyhawk to Forgotten Realms, and Forgotten Realms, mm-hmm. we're now going into a 5.0 version, and and folks like he, and look, I don't know if he's ever played the game or not, but he writes it as if he was a player.
Yeah.
And I think that when you get folks like that, or you get the Weiss and the Hickmans that write Dragonlance or Ravenloft, and you see others that have navigated their way through a Dungeons and Dragons esque realm to present a novel. It's something for those who cannot play. I mean, let's face it, we all grow up and we all have families, we all have jobs that pull us away, and my group of nerds have found a way to play on Sunday nights from 6 to 10 at night, and just enough to duck away from wives and husbands and kids and work, just for our own 4 hours of escapism. We've been able to keep it up for 30 years, going into this, and I think that's the kind of thing that a Salvatore does for me. It allows me to read that while I'm traveling, or have a book on tape, or in this case, book on tape. Sure, that shows how old I am. But listening as I'm driving in audiobooks, helps me, in my role playing, but it also helps me in my writing.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me. Even I don't know, I guess you can draw a lot of parallels to that as well. So say you're a gamer, for example, you've probably got your console at home, but you've probably got a handheld console that you take on the move with you. Maybe you've got a couple mobile games on your phone. So I guess it sort of allows you to to sort of experience that thing that you love some more.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I've got those games, and now you're able to play those games and buy your levels and equipment and things like that. It's another way of experiencing the same game. It's just next generation.
You're listening to The Art Show on 106.6 FM, Wickham Sound. My name's Dane Cobain. I'm in conversation with fantasy author J.V. Hilliard. And this is Persephone in the Underworld with their Quarantine Sessions version of She Don't Care by Tom Rosenthal.
This is Wickham Sound.
Welcome back to The Art Show on 106.6 FM Wickham Sound. My name's Dane Cobain. I'm here in conversation with fantasy author J.V. Hilliard. So you mentioned something that I thought was really interesting there, that you said that R.A. Salvatore writes like a player. And I can kind of see what you mean as well. And I think it's an interesting idea that you can spot whether somebody's got, say, experience of being a dungeon master from maybe the book they write or the movie they shoot or something like that. And I wondered what it's been like for you, this process of you going from being a dungeon master to crafting the Warminster books as a series of books, you know?
Well, I appreciate you asking that, and you're right. I think my experience in that has led to it in a variety of ways. So at the base, you know, the realm of Warminster comes from 20-plus years of role-playing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a culmination of either adventures that I have dungeon mastered or adventures that I've played as a player, taking the best of the realms and putting them together into one.
So a few shows ago on the Art Show on Wickham Sound, I spoke to a friend of mine called Ollie Jacobs, who's another indie writer, and he actually had some basically Dungeons and Dragons style figurines of his characters made. Well, I was asking him whether just having these little physical representations of the characters, you know, in front of him makes it easier for him to write about them. But I suppose actually having played the characters in a campaign is almost the next step up. I can't imagine a situation in which a writer has come closer to being the characters they're writing about, you know?
Yeah, and or working alongside them, right? I mean, in many respects, you know, the characters that are reflected in the Warminster series are characters that I either ran or had run through as a DM,
yeah.
You know, the other player characters. So I know how they react. I know, you know, how they're going to respond to certain things. And it's not all the same in the books. You know, ultimately, you know, the books take on, you know, a life of their own and things change, which I think will be exciting for my players once they have a chance to read what their characters have done or their new characters have done. But ultimately, it gives you a sense of perspective, right? It's easy because you once wore that veil. You know, at some point, you were one of those characters. And, and so whether it's, you know, a character in my book or a character in his, I am certain that the perspective of a player and or the perspective of a dungeon master allows you to better get into that character and understand what he or she is thinking and then respond in a way that they would.
Yeah, for sure. When you're running a Dungeons & Dragons campaign, you don't really control where the players go. And again, in that video, one of the memes was about, you know, would you like to go to this town or this town? And the surprise is both towns are the same, you know? It's kind of about giving the illusion of choice. But I think there's some parallels between when you're a dungeon master and you don't really know what decisions people are going to make, but you kind of know where they're going to end up and you know the general sort of framework of it. I mean, would you say it's similar in writing a novel?
Absolutely. You know, so I think you hit the nail on the head in the sense that, you know, as a dungeon master, you try to prepare thinking that you've got 80% of what they're going to do, but there are characters that always surprise you. Sometimes that's the best of the best.
And
those are the moments that you remember as either a dungeon master or a player when there was that level of impossibility and why did they do that. But I think with a book, you're absolutely right. Sometimes in the case of the Warminster series, I'm writing things as the way I would think that they would play out, or that they did, and then you get into there, and on your own, as you think about it and overthink it sometimes, you get an understanding of what should have happened. And so you write that ending or you write that scene in a way that, you know, you wish something could have played out or should have played out because it's better. And I think that makes you feel, you know, good in terms of being an author and or a DM, knowing that you're taking folks to a place where you're all on the same page. And there's nothing better as a dungeon master to looking around a table or now in this case, looking around a Skype tree, seeing five or six faces looking back at you, knowing that when you're explaining it, they're seeing exactly what it is that you're explaining to them. There's a feeling there that as a storyteller that's captivating and it makes you feel good. And it doesn't happen all the time. So when you get that, you treasure those moments, and you remember what it was. And those are the kind of things I'm trying to weave into the novel.
Yeah, for sure. And I think those are the kind of things that do make a book unforgettable, you know? I mean, I think if you think about, no matter what genre of book you're reading, it's always those moments that, as a reader as well, really kind of grip you and you know, leave you going back for more, I suppose.
Yeah, you're seeing through the eyes of the author, you know, the owner of that property, that the owner of the story, and when you know when you have identified with them. You feel it, you can sense it, they sense it too, and I can tell you moments in. It doesn't have to be the ending or some epic scene. It's just a certain description of something that jumps out and you're like, oh, I see exactly what he or she has written. You know, I am there. And that's the escapism I think people look for in a Game of Thrones or in, a Forgotten Realms or in a Shannara. They want to be put in those scenarios. And so I think that's what, as a good writer and or a good dungeon master, that's what you're looking for is those stolen moments.
Cool, yeah. So we've sort of talked about how the Warminster books have sort of evolved out of dungeon mastering. So I wondered if you could, and I know this might be quite difficult because, again, it's like trying to summarize Game of Thrones or something, but could you kind of give us a top line overall view of what the Warminster series is about and maybe introduce a couple of the characters?
Sure. I mean, the realm itself is a realm, as I mentioned earlier, is a culmination of many years of playing a game, But the characters, again, have sort of taken on a life of their own. And one of the main characters in the first book, The Last Keeper, is a character named Damis Allery. And Damis is a young seer who was born blind, but at a very young age was visited by a mage, and that visiting stranger blessed him with sight. And as he grew, that sight was both physical and metaphysical. And what I mean by that is he's more of a prophet and a seer, and as some of those visions came to pass, those around him recognized he had this power, and they sent him to a sect of seers named the Keepers of the Forbidden. And it's there that he's learning to master those powers. But as he gets there and gets older, and now his character is in his late teens, he starts to have a recurring nightmare. And it's in that nightmare, and it's the struggle of him learning how to use his powers to solve the riddle of that nightmare so that he can save the soul of the sect that he belongs to. I'm not giving away much more than you'd read in the prologue.
Yeah.
I think ultimately, it's a struggle of a character who is learning to grow up not only as someone who is part of a sect of these prophets, but one that doesn't understand the depth and breadth of his own power and is now confronted with the potential of an enemy that is seeing him in the same way he's seeing his visions, which I think could be gripping and a lot of fun for the reader.
Earlier on, you mentioned the Wizards of the Coast and whatnot, and Dungeons and Dragons, and obviously there are certain licenses that you can't use. I think the same with the Tolkien estates. There are certain terms and whatnot you can't use. So how have you found the process of, crafting your fantasy world without, encroaching on, I don't know, maybe you can't call things orcs, for example. How have you adapted to that?
Sure. Actually, it's been a fun process. I think that most folks that are lovers of the genre of the fantasy adventure realm or sci-fi realms find that all the time. It's easy for me, for example, to explain to someone in Star Wars or Star Trek terms what it is they're doing. But for a new author, finding a similar term for that same operation or that same scan or whatever it may be is creative, right? And, once you get your creative juices flowing, I've tried to address it in the same way. And so staying away from terms that may belong to those estates and that may belong to those properties is something that's, it's a challenge, but it's a fun challenge. It's a creative challenge. It's something as an author you want to do too. And frankly, you want people to know that your property is also unique.
Yeah.
And you want them to fall in love with what you've written too. And so even though I think that there are, certain staples that you find that cross those genres, whether it's an elf or a dwarf, there are those, like you mentioned, like Uruk-hai or orcs that may be difficult to use. But I've been able to do that by skipping around, renaming and rethinking the way some of those characters and or races can be shown, also with its own properties. And that way it's not something that's developed and borrowed from, but that folks will identify with pretty quickly.
Yeah, for sure. And I think actually it does kind of, as you say, it shows that your work is unique as well and gives you an opportunity to build your world a bit more, I suppose. What would you rather see? Would you rather see like a movie adaptation of the Warminster books or like an official Warminster Dungeons & Dragons pack from Dungeons & Dragons?
Well, I'll answer that question in two ways. I think that the first way is my wife has already casted the movie version of what she's read. And so in her eyes, I think she would want to see this adapted into a movie or a series that way. For me, I would love to see Warminster be the next Forgotten Realms of Greyhawk. I think that would be a signature way of wrapping up what is a lifetime of memories and fun and entertainment with a group of friends that are my party. And their party members' names change over the years, but I know them by those same names, and I think that would be a fantastic way for this to sort of end itself and culminate. But my wife and her friends have already picked the lead male characters for many of the ones that I've been reading in the books. accent. So I'll probably lose out on that one.
And just the last couple of questions, really. So where can people find out more about you, and what have you got planned next?
Sure. So Twitter is at JV Hilliard Books. My website is jvhilliard.com, and Facebook is JV Hilliard. So it's pretty easy to find. It's only one of a kind on any of those mm-hmm. that I've seen. So I think it's pretty easy for people to track that down. And or, you know, the Warminster series, I'm hoping to at least get to a trilogy and some sort of final ending for the first rung of the adventures mm-hmm. as we go through that. And in the next few months here, we should see the last paper release.
You're listening to The Art Show on 106.6 FM at Wickham Sound. That was a conversation with fantasy writer J.V. Hilliard, the author of the Warminster series. And I've got something a little bit special for you right now. This is from who's hopefully going to be next week's guest, actually, Tony Goff of Tony Goff and the Broken Colours. They have a new single coming out called Rearrange, and it's not technically released until this coming Friday the 19th of June. But he sent it over to me anyway, and he said I could break the embargo to play it early. So happy days. Let's, I don't know, possibly an exclusive. I haven't asked. some info from him here, which I'll read out as well. So here is our new upcoming single, Rearrange, brought to you this time by award-winning Bentley Records, out June 19th, 2020. The track was recorded in January 2020 with Antonio Hanna at Freefall Studios, mixed by Paul Frost and mastered at Sonomax. This was pre-pandemic. Tony actually recorded with a huge illness and had to take huge precautions to be able to sing for the recording. But the tune itself wasn't written about the virus, but the theme very much suits the mood, so to speak. Tony was going to self-release this record, but ended up signing a deal with award-winning Bentley Records based in New York. This will be our first release with them. So here we go, Tony Goff and the Broken Colours, Rearrange.
Driving down the same roads every day, seeing the same old faces and the same old names. I'm climbing to find me a real safe space. You're struggling to stay afloat. Every breath may be our last. It's time for a change, might have the chances. Time for a change, might have the chance. Time for a change, might have the chance. Oh. Know you're free. Missing out on what I need most. I'm not a person, I'm just a healing post. Sometimes you have to take a leap of faith. Do what scares you, baby. Don't ever hesitate. Rearranging, everything's changing. Lacking the time, can't find the motivation. Just who I am. 'Cause I can't remember that shell of a man. Oh.
love music, love talk, love Wickham Sound.
Being a foster carer isn't just about providing vulnerable children a safe home. It's about loving, listening and guiding. It's about changing their lives. If there's space in your home and you have the time and patience, then Nexus Fostering wants to hear from you. We're your local fostering agency, rated outstanding by Ofsted, and we're here to support you in supporting them with full training and a competitive allowance. For a career that really makes a difference, visit nexusfostering.co.uk or call 0800
Hi, it's Pippa here. Join me every morning at 7 o'clock for the Wickham Sound Breakfast Show, featuring all your usual favourites, including Carefree Karaoke, The Breakfast Banger, Chickatita's Choice, and, in an effort to keep your morning routine as normal as possible, we'll be taking the register at 8:45. I'll name check all the people that have been in touch with me every morning. So why not tweet me, send me a message on Facebook, or email studio@wickhamsound.org.uk. Don't be late now, and no skulking behind the bike sheds. That's the Wickham Sound Breakfast Show every weekday morning from 7.
This is Wickham Sound.
Yo, my homies, my trouble is this, that I'm not really sure what a homie is. Now, please don't be offended, I don't mean to insult you, but I'm not au fait with the rapping culture. No, please don't be offended, I don't mean to insult you. I'm trying to figure out the rapping culture, because it's hard to be a rapper and a son of a gun when talking in received pronunciation. Well, shizzle my nizzle. That's just absurd. I mean, shizzle and nizzle aren't even words, and it's all rather difficult for someone like me. I blame it on the BBC. I'm a typical Radio 4 sort of chap, so it's hard to write white middle class rap. It's a middle class rap. Your average rapper isn't one who says quis custodiet ipsos custodes. Maybe a more apposite quote to try would be nil carborundum illegitimi. Nobody laughed. Should have guessed. Errare humanum est, but a smattering of Latin won't fill the gap between this and my white middle class rap. It's a middle class rap. You see, I've been listening, can't you tell, to some other chaps who do this sort of thing rather well. I think that I could be the English 50 cent. At current exchange rates, that's 32 pence. Or maybe make it my life's mission to fill the transatlantic Snoop Doggy position. I could not be Eminem, what goes in his head? So if not Eminem, maybe Smarties instead. It might just be I'm talking claptrap when I try my white middle class rap. It's a middle class rap. My friends tell me that I need some bling to complete the look, you know, the kind of thing. Some golden rings and chains that will make me be, well, rather like the A-Team's Mr. T. Am I right when I think I've understood that we're not talking headgear to be in the hood? And do I really have to wear a baseball cap to perform my white middle-class rap? It's a middle-class rap. I needed some drugs, I went to score a 24-pack of paracetamol. If I used the N-word, that would be, well, rather like rap but with a capital C.
That was Middle Class Rap by Filthy Phil. My name's Dane Cobain, you're listening to The Art Show on 106.6 FM at Wickham Sound. And we've reached that part of the show where I give you like a weekly recommendation of a book, a movie slash TV show, and an album to listen to. So I guess we'll start with the TV show. And I've been trying to recommend stuff specifically that, obviously that I've been watching. The same with the books and the music. And the main thing I've been watching is Game of Thrones. You might have heard of it. It was fairly popular a couple of years ago. Had quite a poor final series. We don't talk about the final series. We also don't talk about how the fans had a petition to try to get the entire final season rewritten and reshot. Because that was kind of crazy as well. I don't know, it was a bit like... bit entitled, wasn't it? A bit cancel culture-y almost. But yeah, I've been watching Game of Thrones again just because, really. I mean, one of the issues with spending so much time at home and, you know, trying to keep everybody safe by never going outside is that I've watched everything that was on my YouTube list, everything that was on my Netflix list, So actually, at the moment, I've got Game of Thrones, and then I'm going to watch a bunch of old sword and sorcery movies, because I was writing an article for a client about the best sword and sorcery movies. So sitting there writing like about Red Sonja and the old Conan movies, and even like Willow. What a great movie. I haven't seen that for ages. So now I've got to go out and track down all of these old sword and sorcery movies. But before I do that, I need to finish Game of Thrones. And I don't know, I've been watching it for like a week, and I'm on season 6 out of 8. So I think I've made a pretty sizable dent in it. And hopefully I'll finish it over the next week or so, and can crack on with some other stuff and give you some other recommendations. Because I feel like Game of Thrones is not a particularly good recommendation, because everyone's either seen it or they're just not going to watch it at this point. Although, I don't know, I'm confused because my mum has watched up to season 6 or 7 and then never finished it. And I kind of feel like if you're gonna be dedicated enough to watch that far, surely you're going to watch the end of it, no matter how bad it was. But she's probably seen all the spoilers anyway, I guess. For this week's book, I'm going to recommend The Positronic Man by Isaac Asimov and Robert Silverberg. I think this was actually written by Silverberg after Asimov's death, but it's based on Bicentennial Man, which is an Asimov story. And it taps into Asimov's three laws of robotics, and I'll read those out for you. The three laws of robotics. 1. A robot may not injure a human being, or through inaction, allow a human being to come to harm. 2. A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. 3. A robot must protect its own existence, as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law. So what this book does really well is it then investigates those laws and how they can be applied. So for example, a robot is ordered, it's like a guardian robot for these little kids, and it's ordered to swim out to a rock, basically for their amusement. And he refuses to go on the basis that if he leaves their side and something happens to them, he's broke the second law the first law. I can't ever remember which law is which. So, but then afterwards he goes out when he's off duty and swims out, and he thinks he probably could have done it without putting them in danger. And that pretty much sets up the rest of this novel, because he becomes increasingly more human and starts questioning his programming, starts like designing his own upgrades for his body, and starts wearing clothes, for example. He ends up going to court to prove that he's a human, or not necessarily a human. The definition was an artificial person. He knows he's not human. You can prove he's not human because a human is Homo sapiens. But does that mean he's not a person if he experiences emotions and desires? And so, yeah, there are a lot of these really interesting questions in it. And actually, it was super interesting to read, especially at the moment with Black Lives Matter dominating a lot of the discussions that people are having, because it's kind of about a civil rights movement, but it's a civil rights movement for robots, you know? But if you bear in mind, I mean, this was actually written, I think, in the 90s, but Asimov's heyday, like, he was writing during the 60s, and so I think there are some interesting parallels there between, like, you know, the equality movement for humans and the equality movement for robots. Although I would argue that we also need an equality movement for animals as well. And for this week's album, well, I recently celebrated my birthday. I turned 31. And I guess that got me thinking a lot about my childhood. And I've been listening to a lot of the music I used to be into when I was a kid. I mean, when I was like 14, it was like Nirvana and a bit of pop punk like Bowling for Soup. I saw those live about 6 times. And I was actually thinking about recommending Bleach by Nirvana, their first album. But I don't know, it's not exactly like mainstream appeal stuff. I guess you could go and listen to Nevermind, but Nevermind. I want to recommend something else instead. So I'm going to recommend the album Highly Evolved by The Vines, who are another band I was really into. Their lead singer's called Craig Nichols. He actually has Asperger's, and he was like the first, I guess, major rock star / musician that I heard of who sort of talked about it quite openly in interviews and stuff. I also used to really like his hair. I actually once took a photo of him into a hairdresser's and asked them to give me a Craig Nichols haircut, and they refused. So then I just started cutting my own hair and did that for like 4 years. And then I started going back to the hairdresser's because my boss made me with a verbal warning if I didn't get my hair cut. And then I went self-employed. And now there's a lockdown and no hairdressers are on, so I have to cut my own hair again. But that's a massive tangent. So Highly Evolved, The Vines, is kind of like the next evolution of grunge, I suppose. They're an Australian band. They're kind of influenced by the grunge movement, but also by, you know, the Beatles and things like that. So that brings us to about the end of this week. Not sure who we're chatting to next week, so tune in or keep your eyes peeled on our Facebook page at The Art Show on Wickham Sound. If you just search for it, you'll find us. And we'll let you know before each show who's going to appear on it and what music to expect. You can also email me here at the studio on dane.cobain@wickhamsound.org.uk. I'm always looking for local musicians, poets, that sort of thing. And also anyone involved in the arts community who'd like to come on and have a chat with us. In the meantime, I will see you next Tuesday at 7 p.m. And I want to leave you with something that me and my friend Dave have been working on. So full disclosure, this is me singing in this. This is a song called Watch the Planet Die. That's a sort of a global warming-y song. I actually wrote it just before the coronavirus outbreak, so it's kind of weird looking back on that time, I guess. But yeah, me and my friend Dave are in a band called The Ilk, and we've been working on a new album, and we've got a guy called Steve Smith from Maidenhead. He's helping us to master the thing. And so yeah, he helped us to master this one, so shout out to Steve as well. So this is The Ilk with Watch the Planet Die. I'll see you next week.
Wickham Sound.